Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about Walmart. Walmart owns the world's largest retail chain. It operates more than 370 supercenters, 374 discount stores, 599 Sam's Clubs, 799 neighborhood markets in the United States, and about 6,101 foreign stores in Latin America, Asia, Canada, and UK. Today, we will review the company's 10K annual report to get a better idea of its business. Then we'll look at the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. We'll perform a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. And finally, do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in Walmart at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review Walmart.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that Walmart filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended January 31st, 2021. And on page 6 of this report, the company provides us a business overview. Over here, Walmart talks about its strategy. It states that by leading on price, it earns the trust of its customers every day by providing a broad assortment of quality merchandise and services at everyday low prices. Everyday low prices is Walmart's pricing philosophy, under which it prices items at a low price every day so its customers trust that its prices will not change under frequent promotional activity. Additionally, everyday low cost is Walmart's commitment to control expenses so its cost savings can be passed along to its customers. On the next page, Walmart breaks down its three reportable segments. The three reportable segments are Walmart US, Walmart International, and Sam's Club. Walmart US is Walmart's largest segment and operates in the United States, including all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. The segment had net sales of $370 billion for fiscal 2021, which represented about 67% of its 2021 consolidated net sales. The second segment is its Walmart International segment, which is its second largest segment and is operated in 25 countries outside of the United States as of January 31, 2021. The Walmart International segment had a net sales of $121.4 billion for fiscal 2021, which represented about 22% of the fiscal 2021's consolidated net sales. The third and last segment is its Sam's Club segment, which operates in 44 states in the United States and in Puerto Rico. Sam's Club had a net sales of $63.9 billion for fiscal 2021, which represented about 11% of the company's consolidated fiscal 2021 net sales. Now let's look at page 79, where Walmart breaks down its revenue across these segments over the past 3 years. We can see that the Walmart US segment saw growth every year for the past 3 years. The Walmart International segment has barely seen any growth over the past 3 years, as we can see that the segment's net sales has fluctuated between $120 to $121 billion. And finally, the Sam's Club segment saw a growth in its net sales over the past 3 years. Next, the company breaks down its revenue across its US and non-US operations segment. We can see that the U.S. operations segment saw a growth every year for the past 3 years. However, the non-U.S. operations barely saw any growth. So when we look at the total revenue numbers and we see a growth, we know that that growth is governed by the fact that the U.S. operations revenues are growing. Next, looking at the long-lived assets, we can see that the U.S. operations assets have been growing every year for the past 3 years. The non-U.S. operations, on the other hand, we see that the assets were cut in half from the year 2020 to 2021. On the next page, Walmart talks about its net sales by merchandise category. We can see that for the fiscal year 2020 and 2021, the grocery category accounted for majority of the company's total revenue. Next, the company breaks down its Walmart International net sales by market. We can see that for the year 2021, Mexico and Central America brought in about $33 billion, and the United Kingdom brought in about $29 billion. Together, Mexico and Central America and the United Kingdom brought in more than half of the company's Walmart International segment sales. Looking at the Sam's Club net sales by merchandise category, we can see that both for the fiscal year 2020 and 2021, the grocery and consumables segment brought in lion's share of the company's total sales for that segment. Finally, I wanted to point out that all three segments, that is the Walmart US, Walmart International, as well as the Sam's Club segment, saw a growth in its e-commerce. For the Walmart US segment, the e-commerce sales grew from $24.1 to $43 billion from the fiscal year 2020 to 2021. The Walmart International segment saw a growth from $11.8 billion to $16.6 billion in its e-commerce sales. And the Sam's Club segment saw a growth in its e-commerce from $3.8 billion to $5.3 billion from the fiscal year 2020 to 2021. Now that we have a brief understanding of Walmart's business and its three operating segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at Walmart's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Walmart. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue was about $447 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $559 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has been trending upwards. The only year when the company saw a decline in its revenue was in the year 2016, when its revenue declined from about $485 billion to $482 billion. However, other than that one unique year, every year for the past 10 years, the company has seen a growth in its revenue. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is what we get when we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about $26.6 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $22.5 billion. Ideally, we want the company's operating income to be staying steady or increasing. We can see that over the past few years, the company's operating income has stayed fairly consistent. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about $15.7 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $13.5 billion. We can see that over the past 10 years, the company has always reported a positive net income number, which means that over the past 10 years, the company has always been profitable. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has been fluctuating. We can see that from the year 2012 through 2015, the company's net income hovered between $15 to $17 billion range. Over the next few years, the company's net income dropped all the way down to about $6.7 billion. The following year, in the year 2020, the company's net income more than doubled. And for the year 2021, it's about $13.5 billion. Ideally, we want the company's net income number to be staying steady or increasing. However, in the case of Walmart, we can see that the company's net income numbers have been fluctuating, which tells us that the company is unable to keep its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses in check, or it has these one-time expenses or sales which either deflate or inflate its income numbers. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2012, the company paid out about $1.46 per share as dividend. And for the trailing 12 months, it paid out about $2.18 per share as dividend. We can see that Walmart's dividends have increased every year for the past 10 years. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had 3,474 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, it had 2,833 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number have decreased. This goes to show that the company has been buying back its shares every year for the past 10 years, which actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. After that, looking at the book value per share, the book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from the company's total assets. Back in 2012, the company's book value was about $20.86 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about $28.88 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has been trending upwards. The fact that the company has positive book value per share tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was about $10.745 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $25.81 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. We can see that Walmart's free cash flow has always been positive, which shows that the company's operating cash flow was always greater than its capital spending. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows from my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2021 figure of $25,810 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was about 3.51%, and for the year 2021, it was about 2.42%. What this means is for the fiscal year 2021, every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had about $2.42 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2012, the company's return on equity was about 22.45%, and for the year 2021, it was about 17.37%. Walmart's return on equity every year for the past 10 years has been greater than 8%. After that, looking at the return on invested capital, this number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2012, the company's return on invested capital was about 14.11%, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about 7.92%. Walmart's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 3.2%. And since Walmart's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage, the interest coverage compares the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's interest coverage was about 11.51 times. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about 8.59 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was 0.88, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.96. Over the past 10 years, the company's current ratio has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 0.20, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.36. Walmart's competitor Target actually has slightly better current and quick ratios than Walmart. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage ratio tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 2.71, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.96. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio. This ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.66, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.70. Walmart actually has slightly better financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios than Target. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios, focusing on the day sales outstanding. The day sales outstanding number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was at 4.50 days, and for the year 2021, it was about 4.18 days. Over the past 10 years, the company's day sales outstanding number has stayed fairly consistent. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company is being aggressive with its accounting and it's trying to artificially inflate its income on its income statement. Next, looking at the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does Walmart's products sit in its inventory before they are sold. Back in 2012, the company's day's inventory was about 41.95 days, and for the year 2021, it was about 38.81 days. Over the past 10 years, the company's day's inventory has stayed fairly consistent, hovering somewhere in the 40 days range. We did see a decrease in the company's day's inventory in the year 2021, which was brought about primarily because of the pandemic, where the company saw an increase in sales and a depletion in its inventory. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does Walmart take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company took about 38.21 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2021, it took about 41.73 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want to see the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing, and we can see that Walmart's payables period have stayed fairly consistent over the past few years. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as that means that the company is trying to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers by trying to hoard on to its cash. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives an idea of how many times does Walmart's inventory go through its system in a calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's inventory turnover was about 8.70 times, and for the year 2021, it was about 9.40 times. Over the past 10 years, the company's inventory turnover has stayed fairly consistent. In fact, the company's inventory turnover has been growing every year since 2016, which tells us that the company is becoming more efficient with going through its inventory. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Walmart has a PE of 41.9, whereas S&P 500 is at 25.3. Walmart has a price-to-book of 5.2, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.5. Walmart has a price-to-sales of 0.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.2. Walmart's price-to-cash flow is at 14.3, whereas S&P 500 is at 18.1. And finally, the dividend yield. Walmart has a dividend yield of 1.5%, whereas S&P 500 has a dividend yield of 1.4%. We can see that from a price-to-earnings and price-to-book ratio, Walmart is overvalued when compared to the S&P 500. However, on the rest of the metrics, Walmart is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's perform the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for Walmart. Over here, I based the company's 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $25,810 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 6%. What this means is I expect Walmart's free cash flow to grow at 6% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 4%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect Walmart's free cash flow to grow at 4%. The company has 2,833 million shares outstanding and has long-term debt of $41,194 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $165 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price of about $149 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 10% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $212 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $509 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $165. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Walmart is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $60 per share. And finally, if we disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that Walmart is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for the company to worry about paying its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $180 per share. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for Walmart. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the past 10 years. We can see that Walmart's free cash flow for the most part has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 25% likelihood that Walmart's free cash flow will grow at 8%. There's a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 6%, and a 25% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 4%. These are the potential free cash flow raise that we get into the future. After that, accounting for the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 2,833 million shares, at the current stock price of about $149.25 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 8% on this investment. What this means is if you were to purchase a share of Walmart at the current stock price of about $149.25 per share and hold this security through 2060, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 8% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We briefly went over the company's 10K annual report and saw that the company has three reportable segments. The Walmart US segment brings in majority of the company's net sales. We saw that Walmart's revenue over the past 10 years has been trending upwards. Over the past 3 years, majority of the company's growth has come from its US segment, as its international segment sales have stagnated since 2018. Next, we saw that the company's net income has slowly been decreasing over the past 10 years. However, the net income did see a jump in fiscal 2020 and 2021. After that, we saw that Walmart has been hiking its dividends every year for the past 10 years, and the company has been buying back its shares every year for the past 10 years. Both these actions of dividend hikes and share buybacks show that the company's management is shareholder friendly. Next, we saw that over the past 10 years, the company's return on equity has always been greater than 8%. The company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, which shows us that the company's management is creating value for shareholders. And finally, the company's interest coverage is greater than 5x. Next, we looked at the company's financial health and liquidity ratios and saw that Target actually has slightly better current and quick ratios than Walmart. However, Walmart has slightly better financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios than Target. Next, we looked at the efficiency ratios and saw that Walmart's efficiency have stayed fairly consistent over the past 10 years. After that, we compared Walmart's current valuation to that of the S&P 500 and found that from a price-to-earnings and price-to-book perspective, Walmart is overvalued to the S&P 500. However, on all the other metrics, Walmart is undervalued to the S&P 500. Next, we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis and found the intrinsic value to be about $165.26 per share. And when we compare that intrinsic value to the company's current stock price of about $149.25 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 10% below the company's intrinsic value. When we performed the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if you were to invest in Walmart at the current stock price of about $149.25 per share and hold the security through 2060, we can expect to get an annual return of about 8% on this investment. Overall, Walmart is a fundamentally strong company that seems to be undervalued. With its everyday low price and everyday low cost philosophies, it can certainly pass down the inflationary pressures that it sees to its customers without hurting traffic in its stores. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Walmart interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.